on Tuesday, February 7th, with 10.9 seconds remaining in the third quarter, LeBron James of the LA Lakers became the all-time leading scorer in the NBA with 38,388 points. He stretched out his arms and a frenzy of applause from the adoring crowd, including many press and onlookers who had come specifically to that game to see James break this record. But one fan stood out from among the rest at 7 feet, 2 inches tall. The Laker faithful looked to see the response of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had held the record for 39 years. Lots of speculation surrounded Abdul-Jabbar's reaction for weeks leading up to the record breaking. Would he be angry? Would he say nothing? Would he dismiss James as a lesser player in a game that had changed? And yet Abdul-Jabbar was just as clear about how he would feel before James sank the final point as he was when the crowd rose to honor him with a standing ovation beside James. It's as if I won $1 billion in a lottery, and 39 years later, someone won $2 billion, he said. How would I feel? Grateful that I won, and happy the next person also won. His winning in no way affects my winning. For the past 20 years, I've occupied myself with social activism, my writing career, and my family, especially my 3 grandchildren. If I had a choice of having my scoring record remain intact for another 100 years or spend one afternoon with my grandchildren, I'd be on the floor in seconds stacking Legos and eating Uncrustables. Abdul-Jabbar's reflections on this new moment of basketball glory drew the attention of celebrated author Rebecca Solnit. Imagine some of you have read some of her pieces. She said that Abdul-Jabbar described one of the basic principles of unenvious non-competition, of generous living, that it could apply to so much in life. Could we call this a Zen dunk? She asked. Records are tangible, of course, but being the greatest, the most, you don't need to cling to that forever. This is what the world looks like when you think in terms of abundance rather than scarcity, when you can be happy for others' gifts, successes, and joys. There are board games and card games and team games in which having more is predicated on the other party having less. But in life, someone else being beautiful or happy or loved, well, maybe there's one thing to say about the capitalism of the heart, the belief that the essences of life too can be seized and hoarded, that you can corner the market on confidence, stage a hostile takeover of happiness. This, Solnit writes, is based on scarcity economics, the notion or perhaps the feeling that there's not enough to go around, and the belief that these tangible phenomena exist in a fixed quantity to be scrambled for, rather than that you can only increase them by giving them away. Here in worship, we create and name the abundant love in our lives, the love that will not let us go, the love that we can freely give away. Thank you. So this morning, as we begin to explore this theme of not crying over spilled milk, I need a couple of volunteers who would be willing to read one sentence. Just one sentence. Yay, thank you. If you could come forward, that would be wonderful. So maybe we could stop sweating the small stuff or not crying over spilled milk if we were able to follow our own basic moral code or value in everyday life. While religious beliefs and practices vary widely around the world, there is almost near unanimity amongst different religions, ethical systems, and philosophies that each person should be treated as we all wish to be treated. What you might have heard of before as the golden rule. So I have a few of different versions of that across religion, and I'd love for a few volunteers. We could actually use a few more if there's anyone else who's willing to read. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Bob. All right. So it might be maybe one or two sentences. I hope that's still okay. All right. But I'll ask you to each come forward and just read one of the sentences and let us know which faith it's from. And it's right here on this page, and you can just follow it in order. Does that sound okay?
Okay.
Great.
And if thine eyes be turned toward justice, choose thou for thy neighbor that which thou choosest for thyself. The Baha'i Faith.
Hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Buddhism.
And as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. Christianity.
Do not do to others what you do not want them to do to you. Confucianism.
Do not do to others what would cause pain if done to you. Hinduism.
None of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself. Islam.
Thank you. All these different ways of saying, love thy neighbor, do unto others as you wish to be treated, as you would like done to you. Yet there are some problems we may encounter in putting this rule into practice. There's an author, David Kirpin, who writes that it's a splendid concept, except for one thing. Everyone is different. And the truth is that many cases what you'd want done to you is different from what your partner or employee or customer or investor or wife or child or your actual neighbor would want done to him or her. So Kirpin, as other people have suggested, offered the platinum rule. Do unto others as they would want done to them. He gives this great example. Personally, I'm very fond of strawberries and cream. But I found that for some strange reason, fish prefer worms. So when I went fishing, I didn't think about what I wanted. I thought about what they wanted. I didn't bait the hook with strawberries and cream. Rather, I dangled a worm or a grasshopper in front of the fish and said, "Wouldn't you like to have that?" The golden rule may be perfectly useful for situations in which we want to behave courteously, but it keeps us personally at the center of the conversation. Instead, why don't we try to be in partnership or dialogue? We could ask people what they like instead of just telling them what we offer. We could ask permission or for input from the people most affected by a decision we're going to make. We feel most loved, valued, respected, and cherished when we're treated in ways that matter to us. Because we are unique and we each have different ways of giving and receiving love, we need to know how to treat and love those with whom we are in relationship. Even if we might define or see love in some of the same ways across faiths, we still need to learn about one another. As such, the platinum rule encourages us to find out what the person actually wants, rather just inferring it from our own preferences. In a world where we are marketed to and told what we want, what love should look like during this Valentine's Day week, we won't draw people to us if we just treat them as we would like to be treated. But if we ask them, we can find a whole other world of mutual, authentic connection. Our reading this morning is called Because We Spill Not Only Milk by Nancy Schaefer. Because we spill not only milk, knocking it over with an elbow when we reach to wipe a small face, but also spill seed on soil we thought was fertile but isn't, and also spill whole lives and only later see it in fading light. How much is gone and we hadn't intended it. Because we tear not only cloth, trying to find a true edge and instead making only a hole, but also tear friendships when we grow, and whole mountainsides because we are so many and we want to live right where black oaks lived, once very quietly and still. Because we forgot not only what we are doing in the kitchen and have to go back to the room we were in before, remember why it was we left, but also forget entire lexicons of joy and how we lost ourselves for hours, yet all that time were clearly found and held, and also forgot the hungry not at our table. Because we weep not only at jade plants caught in freeze and precious papers left in rain, but also at legs that may no longer walk or never did, although from the outside they looked like most others. And also weep at words once said as though they might be rearranged, but which once loose refuse to return, and we are helpless. Because we are imperfect and love so deeply, we will never have enough days. We need the gift of starting over, beginning again. Just this constant good. This saving hope. Our bodies may hold some of the key as to why it's difficult to not sweat the small stuff, and how what constitutes small will differ from person to person. And the golden rule, as we come to find out, might be insufficient to treating other people with respect. We may wish to use embodied tools, our own noticing of our own breath to help ourselves not cry over small spilled milk, let things go. Especially if that disruption, that piece of small stuff, that glass of milk is causing us more strife than the small thing itself. But sometimes more than milk is spilled, as Nancy Schaefer reminds us. To say get over it might be like saying stop being you, or don't do unto yourself as you would like to be done. It might shatter the golden rule from within. Yesterday, this don't cry over spilled milk day was a day for remembering the good things, a day for letting one's past continue to sparkle without being upstaged by the present glory of others, as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar showed us. But it may not heal a broken heart, a fractured relationship, the pit in your stomach that might make you feel unworthy or resentful. We could talk about such heartbreak as individual, as one-to-one. But I think that might also miss a part of what Unitarian Universalist love entails. It's bound only in our interdependence. If Abdul-Jabbar had told us that LeBron James's points were not as valid as his own, if his way of playing the game 37 years ago was the only way to play, that the whole record thing was predicated on a singular understanding of worthiness, the truth is that some people would believe him. And there's such an argument floating around in the sports world. But if Abdul-Jabbar had broken with his humility, promoted a bitter untruth through simply just being the legend he is, speaking golden rule nonsense, that others should be held by a certain standard that he, by his own experience, defined for everyone, much would have unraveled. His moral authority holds weight. It's not simply a matter of good sportsmanship, but one response in a key moment in the game's history could define how a whole generation of sports players and fans are viewed, the wholeness of their own actions. We need not look far to see examples of how things play out outside the world of professional sports and elite legendary athletes, sometimes with death-dealing effects. Take, for instance, the continued pain and danger caused by J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter books, refusal to acknowledge the dignity and worth of transgender and non-binary people, and her continued response of, get over it. Her reduction of trans and non-binary to spilled milk. She told us in a series of tweets and inactions that others' views of their gender were not as valid as her understanding of her gender. As if her way of being a woman was the only way to play. That the whole of life as a woman was predicated on a singular understanding of worthiness. And many believed her. On June 6, 2020, J.K. Rowling tweeted an op-ed piece that discussed people who menstruate. I made that mistake right there. It was an article about people who menstruate. And she apparently took issue with the fact that the story did not use the word women. People who menstruate. I'm sure there used to be a word for those people, she said. Someone help me out. And then made a joke about the spelling of the word woman. That initial tweet garnered a lot of backlash. And the Harry Potter author did not back down and wrote about her views in more detail. She attempted to define the right for trans people to exist based on the challenges faced by women as a category, as if women's struggles were based on some inherent quality instead of the real challenge, sexism and misogyny. And many have listened to her. She chose to speak out against the firing of a tax specialist who had been publicly transphobic. And many listened to her. She's also said that she's become interested in trans issues when researching a new character that we've actually this week seen featured in a new video game version of Harry Potter. But people are not characters. Rowling's initial tweets and her subsequent doubling down has drawn a lot of critique, public discussion by trans activists and Harry Potter fans, many of whom found comfort in the story of an outsider finding a place where he belonged. Rowling showed us that she saw trans people as characters more than she viewed transgender women as women. The realities of difference do not exist for someone to use as a means to their own end. As we've said in this congregation before, we know the facts from the Trevor Project, from PFLAG in Santa Clarita, that 78% of transgender and non-binary youth report being the subject of discrimination due to their gender identity. It's clear that we need to do more to support trans and non-binary people, not to invalidate their identities, and not to cause further harm. Rowling's break with the Platinum Rule impacts real people's lives. One most obvious is the tarnishing and the destruction of a great number of heroic characters who were beloved for their differentness, honored for their break with expectation, the crossing of battle lines of conformity. And the second is the effects of a voice such as Rowling's, with a powerful pulpit, upon the city and state battle lines of conformity and personhood, the right to define oneself. The very thing that Rowling's products might have led us to believe have been redefined to leave transgender children and their families out. More than spilled milk, as anti-trans legislation continues to move forward state to state, the effects are not spilled milk, but spilled blood. I believe it is our white supremacy culture that leads us into these false dichotomies. If you are, then I cannot be. And because I am, then you must not be who you say you are. It leads us to believe we might be threatened by the Platinum Rule, by seeing other people for how they see themselves and learning about it. Centering the experience of some and defining the experience for all can lead us to respect the authority of one group to define the dignity and treatment of another. Love thy neighbor, so long as they do not rock the boat. If we want the world to be full of love, then we must do all we can to restrain ourselves from defining love for others. February is a month focused on love as well as on Black history. It's about not forgetting the past, for actively working against the deliberate rubbing out of the past of Black people across the diaspora. You may have seen that this year in celebrating Black History Month on social media, as there's also been a movement towards celebrating Black futures, a narrative, a nod, not one of that's in the tradition of Afrofuturism, the celebration of art, science, and literature to imagine possible futures. In order to gain this future, if you've listened to the music of George Clinton or Miles Davis or Erykah Badu or Beyonce, if you've read Octavia Butler or seen the art of Jean-Michel Basquiat, and if you've watched Black Panther in theaters or at home, then you're familiar with Afrofuturism. You've been acquainted with this movement of understanding the distressing past, seeing the distressing present, but imagining a possible future. We might be unable to fish with strawberries and cream, knowing that we need to see what other people want to be fed in order to change ourselves. I think there's much, much more to say about this, but I want to make one comment about congregational growth as it relates to this Platinum Rule, about this understanding of listening to others. When we decide how to reach out to other people, are we deciding based on what brought us here to Unitarian Universalism, or what people are saying they are spiritually craving now? It doesn't negate my story, doesn't negate your story, our points on the scoreboard of faith, but it may bring us out of an echo chamber and in to serving love as we say we seek to do, in creating and imagining a possible future of our faith that allows difference to be beauty, agency to be possible for everyone, and that we can know one another as beautiful. In general, applying the Platinum Rule requires more social competence than the Golden Rule, because we have to be able to place ourselves in the shoes of another person. But if we are inheritors of this tradition of calls to love thy neighbor, how we do so is not based on our own preference, but it's felt through learning, through relationship, and through reflection. I mean, asking if it's okay to learn about someone else's experience and doing our own homework as well. When I look back at J.K. Rowling's tweets, I think to myself, she can't say that she didn't have access to the information she would need to learn about what wasn't her own experience. When I look at Black History Month and Black Futures Month and Afrofuturism, I see this model for us of the greatness of technology, art, and beauty that is available to help us know how other people different than myself experience life. James Baldwin wrote that people can cry over spilled milk or not, much easier than they can change. You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, and then you read. We are a learned faith, Unitarians and Universalists. So to be in a UU in love with our interdependence is to say, no, I will not get over it when it comes to other people's lives, to the protection of safety of children who are trans and non-binary, to the right of people to name and define their own future, when it comes to the wholeness of one part of our web of existence. I'm going to say that sentence again. You can see that I've had a paper order problem here. When it comes to the wholeness of one part of our web of existence in relation to the whole of ourselves, we are inseparable, woven in a garment of mutuality, believing in one another's definition of themselves. Doing so aloud without needing to center our own experience in order to decide if there's another way of being human that is valid, acknowledging the weft of relationship that bonds each of us to another. It may seem that I'm being too negative on the power of positive thinking, when I'm in fact a pretty big component of pick your battles, and not everyone's opinion is for you. And I'd rather make my way back to love than to self-righteousness. But I want to make sure that the milk that is spilled is only milk. I want to take time to wipe the tears, feel my own human imperfection and what in that as well. I want to ensure that no blood is spilt as I move on ahead or figure out what's really happened. Because we are imperfect and love so deeply, we will never have enough days. We need the gift of starting over, beginning again. Just this constant good, this saving hope.